So he couldn't let it go, so he texted out, and he said, if anybody can make a sentence with lava, he said, text it back. Well, my sister said, you're liable to get your head knocked off for texting this early to me or something like that. I thought that was a good. And then Charlotte says, I'm liable to win this next game. Yep, I mean, they knew right away. I said, that's village talk. Everybody knows that. But, I mean, we grew up hearing people say, I never questioned it, but Philip was like, what is lava? So he looked it up. He said, lava is with the artillery in military. It's an artillery term for lobbing the missile. They lob it over. So anyway, so we got to say it. Vayashev. It sounds funny to you because you're not used to using those syllables, but you say it anyway. Vayashev. Vayashev. So it's Hebrew for he lived. It also is the root word for returned or settled. Now that's something that we learn about Yitzhak. He never could settle. You notice his travels is back and forth. He never could settle, but God wanted him to settle in a place. And Yaakov, when he returned and came back and he settled, this is what this is all about. We'll see the stuff that happened with his sons. It's a great Torah portion. It's going to be in Genesis 37, 1 through Genesis 40, 23. And the half Torah is in the book of Amos. If you haven't listened to the half Torah yet, listen to it. It's real good. Listen to the half Torah. It's very good. So we're going to learn symbolisms of Joseph as a type of future multicolored Israel sent to a foreign land. The rest of the story about the day his brother sold him into slavery and caused their father to believe that he was dead, and its correlation with Yom Kippur. So we'll look at that. It's very interesting how that all started there. Find out the secrets of who Tamar really is and how we see a hidden glimpse of the future high priest through her lineage. Jacob settles in Hebron with his 12 sons. His favorite is 17-year-old Joseph, whose brothers are jealous of the preferential treatment he receives from his father, such as a precious many-colored coat that Jacob makes for Joseph. And that what that symbolizes. There's nothing in the Bible that happens that's not tied into something that we need to look at. There's nothing at all that happens in the Bible that's not significant. Joseph relates to his brothers two of his dreams, which foretells that he is destined to rule over them, increasing their envy and hatred toward him. Simon and Levi plot to kill him, but Reuben suggests that they throw him into a pit instead, intending to come back later and save him. While Joseph is in the pit, Judah has him sold to a band of passing Ishmaelites. The brothers dip Joseph's special coat in blood, the blood of a goat, and shows it to their father, leading him to believe that his most beloved son was devoured by a wild beast. Judah marries and has three children. The eldest is Er. He dies young and childless. His wife Tamar is given in levirate marriage to the second son, Onan. Onan sins by spilling his seed, and he too meets an early death. Judah is reluctant to have his third son marry her, determined to have a child from Judah's family. Tamar disguises herself as a prostitute and seduces Judah himself. Judah hears that his daughter-in-law has become pregnant and orders her execution for harlotry, but when Tamar produces some personal effects he left with her as a pledge for payment, he publicly admits that he is the father. Tamar gives birth to twin sons, Perez, an ancestor of King David, and Zerah. Joseph is taken to Egypt and sold to Potiphar, the minister in charge of Pharaoh's slaughterhouse. Elohim blesses everything he does, and soon he is made overseer of all his master's property. Potiphar's wife desires the handsome and charismatic lad. When Joseph rejects her advances, she tells her husband that the Hebrew slave tried to force himself on her and has him thrown into prison. Joseph gains the trust and admiration of his jailers, who appointed him a position of authority in the prison administration. In prison, Joseph meets Pharaoh's chief butler and chief baker, both incarcerated for offending their royal master. Both have disturbing dreams, which Joseph interprets. In 3 days, he tells them the butler will be released and the baker hanged. Joseph asks the butler to intercede on his behalf with Pharaoh. Joseph's predictions are fulfilled, but the butler forgets all about Joseph and does nothing for him. And now we're done. That was the whole Torah. That's me. I condensed it down. Was that good or what? That was all of it. Who said, "Oh, we wish"? Did anybody say that? Thought I heard that. Come from the front row. Topics in the Porsche. This week's Torah Porsche, Vayashev, Hebrew for "and he lived." In chapter 37, Yosef's coat of many colors and his dream leads to his being sold to the Egyptians. And we're going to really find out who actually sold Joseph. Because we make a statement, and I left it in the summary, the statement that's made, but the rest of the story is put there. That's why that term is put in there. But we'll find out the rest of the story. Because for most of every believer, Christian believer, you know, you'll have messages titles. Today's message is how Joseph's brother sold him into slavery. When you read it in the Torah, it doesn't say that. And we're going to look at that. Chapter 38, Yehudim Tamar and our Messiah of the order of Melchizedek. We're going to look how that wonderful, wonderful picture came about there. In chapter 39, Joseph's tested with temptation and trial before he rises to be ruler. He's tested with temptation and trial before he rises to become ruler. And one of the things we're going to see, the church is going to be no different. Joseph's tested with tests and trials and temptation before he rises to ruler. So he had to go through some things because his faith had to build. His selfless love had to build. His commitment to Yeshua, serving Yah and fulfilling the destiny that he was born to live, had to be fulfilled before he can rise to a place of power. So he went through that. That's how it's going to happen with the house of Israel. There's going to be a testing time of temptation and testing before the end. So for people to believe that you're not going to go through any testing and trials, you're just going to be snatched out of here and don't have to worry about nothing, I just don't see how that matches the... Remember, we always find stories in the Bible and they all match. They parallels and they link together. One dot to the next, it's no, there's, you don't just jump. All of a sudden, there's a big jump. And I think it's setting people up for some surprises. And it's not going to be fun for those who are not speaking the truth. In chapter 40, Joseph interprets dreams correctly. In prison, that reveals the future. And the same thing, that dream of Joseph being interpreted, it represents exactly what happens in the parallels of Yeshua. All the same thing happened, and it's an amazing thing that goes on. Now, in the parties, we'll have a couple of things that we'll discuss. Not spending a ton of time on the parties in this particular Porsche, but In the Peshat, the plain meaning, the sons of Israel become jealous and divided over the beloved son. And that's exactly why the 10 tribes are having to be brought in. They're going to be brought in because it's a provoking the jealousy to bring about change. And how many know there's another beloved son that's talked about? And this is the beloved son is Yeshua. So again, it's another parallel. In the Remez, we look at God's character. God turns others' evils and curses into our goods and blessing. And that's what you got to give time for the Lord to do that. In prayer time today, the same thing. It's been my prayer. I shared this with the men, shared this in our Bible study. What my prayer has been ever since the election day, I said, my prayer is, Lord, you know everything. And what the enemy is meant for evil, you can turn it around for good. What has been done in secret, expose and bring it out into opening, that it bring about what your purpose and your plan is. If your purpose and your plan was to see this thing continue, then don't let the enemy, that's all about evil, thwart the plans that you had. And only God can intervene. We're in a spot where it can only be God. At the end of the day, it'll be because people prayed and God brought it to pass. And that's the greater miracle anyway, to see that happen. Either way, he's still God. It don't change anything. How many understand that? We're closer than we've ever been to the end. In the application for us today, we're going to see these three types of Messiah. We always look for that. The hidden glimpse of the Messiah, there's three types. Joseph, Messiah ben Joseph. Judah, the kingship that comes through the line of the tribe of Judah. And then Tamar. Tamar is the only woman in the Bible that's called this, a righteous Zedek. The only woman in the Bible. She was the granddaughter of this guy right here. A granddaughter of Melchizedek. Wonderful. And we're going to look at that in Jasher. The book of Jasher is powerful. And then there's some other things. We get some time, we'll go back. We got another couple of slides of the party. We're going to go back and look at it. So let's get started. In chapter 37 of Genesis, if you have your Bibles, you want to turn there. I got it on the slides, if not. Chapter 37, Joseph's coat of many colors and his dreams led to his being sold to Egypt. In verse number 1, and Jacob dwelt in the land of his father's sojourning. Notice that. He dwelt in the land of his father's sojourning. In the land of Canaan. And so that right off the bat, he's saying, Vayashev. There's a returning to the land or settling. He settled down. He got to the spot. And in that spot is where God is going to bring that unfolding. So, the root, this is the sheen in the vet. So, this is shuva. This is where we get the word shuva from, right here, these two. And it means return. And then we have the yod, and it's where we get the root for settled. And that's why we have Vayashev. The Vayashev. And so he's trying to get us, once we get to the spot and we get settled, that's where God can do the work. Because what happened when Katrina hit here, we come here and it was a disaster. This place was a disaster. So I was outside right there and the big crater in the levee there, and debris was, you had to walk on it, 5 foot high, you walked on it, crawled on top of it. And I got to the top of the levee, which was just a big dip where it come through, and I was standing there, and I got overwhelmed. I was just overwhelmed about the whole thing. This was the day one that I was back, day one I came back. And I just looked at the river and I said, God, what am I supposed to do with this? And that's when the Lord says, positions everything. I shared this many times with the church. Position is everything. Don't give up your position for nothing and for no reason, because it's everything. And I said, well, I don't know. How you have to show me that in the Word of God. And where did the Lord bring me? He brought me to Jacob when he had the dream. Remember, we just did that portion, the dream about the ladder. He said, because when you hold your position, you get in that spot, you hold position, I'll have angels ascending and descending, and the Lord himself will stand above, and you'll be right where you need to be for the blessing. And that was good enough for me. That was the explanation I got. Man, if I could only know it about the Torah right then and there, I could apply it, but I knew what I knew. And I knew God, you know, this is how God is. He takes us strangers, and we're pilgrims and strangers, and he brings us in, but he don't just force it, because it's not going to fit. He's got to do a little work on us before we're ready for it. And so that's why I always tell people, be careful before you say something real rash about somebody that's just coming into it, because God's doing the work there. You'll put yourself in where you're not walking in the light of God when you say something rash or say something that's real quick out of, you don't have no idea what God is doing with that person. We got to operate in more selfless love, because you don't know the journey they're on. They're on a journey, and God's going to get them there, and we should be praying for them rather than speaking negative about their journey because they hadn't done everything you done. Or they hadn't met up to the standard that we set. We always set in standards. We have these standards we set. We set these standards, and they're false. They're not true. They're not true standards. You look back in your life. You had standards in your life where your standards change as you get older. You get older, you get more wiser. You've been around a lot longer. You've been through a lot of situations. So you change your standards a little bit. But when you were young, you had very little standards. You were young. You were rolling. You was invincible. You didn't care. Nothing could hurt you. You barely got sick. You was going. You get older, you get more. Your standards change a little bit, and you go, okay, I got to watch. I don't do that. You get affected by it. And so what happens, we don't see the process that God's got people going through. And so we'll make a statement that's completely doesn't line up with what God's trying to do for that individual, and it's against what he's doing. We don't give him room or time to work in that person before we judge a situation. And it's really not, it's no place for that. And the Torah teaches completely against that behavior. And so we have to be careful with our words. But here we have Jacob. He's got these boys, and he's showing favor to one. One of them, he's showing just an amazing amount of favor to this one. And there's a reason for that, because he loved Rachel. He loved Rachel. He took Leah as a wife, but he didn't love Leah like he loved Rachel. That's what the scripture tells us. And she was barren, so she couldn't. And so all of a sudden, now she has this son, and so he's excited about this son with Rachel. Very excited. So he shows favoritism to him. And he starts doing stuff for him. This is the genealogist of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the young man was with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought an evil report of them to his father. Now notice, it didn't say he was with Leah's sons, but these were the two servants that were given, one from Leah and one from Rachel. And so there were still some issues with that gene, that DNA chain, because they were serving girls. That DNA chain was still some issues that these boys were having to learn. They were getting through some stuff. And so it was like Jacob had him a little spy. And his name was Joseph. And Joseph was, you know, he was beloved. He was treated different. And so he was on a lookout. And he saw that they weren't behaving right when they should be feeding the sheep. They were out fulfilling self self-desires. When we went through that portion about self. And so instead of them doing the job that they were supposed to be doing as sons growing up under Jacob, their father, they weren't living up to the standard. And so Joseph saw it and he made the report. And Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age and he made him a long robe. So you can see where this is going to go. It's not going to be so nice in the household of Jacob with all these boys and the one that he's giving more attention to, making a special robe. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and were not able to speak peaceably to him. So they picked up on this. They seeing what's going on. But listen, I know we read this story and we can preach a dozen messages from this theme here, how we shouldn't do that. But you have no, again, this is what we got to be careful of. We don't realize what God is doing through Jacob's love toward Joseph. It's going to set the scene to save every one of them boys' life. But if we had to pick it and write it, we wouldn't write it this way. It's not the way. You got to be fair to everybody. We wouldn't write it this way. But guess what? We weren't writing it. We got y'all writing this. And we got to be okay with how it goes. And so we don't, you know, if you read the whole story, we know how it turns out. But when you're first reading it, you go, oh, man, they shouldn't have done that. That was bad. And so we could, you know, we could preach a dozen messages on how bad it was, but we're not seeing the whole point here that we're talking about Yaakov. He's in the spot, and they have that ladder, and the angels are ascending and descending, and the Lord himself is above it. He is walking in the light. His favoritism to Joseph's for a reason. He's prepping him. He's getting him ready because he's going to be the guy. It'll be through him. And we'll see how that plays as this thing goes on. Joseph's coat of many colors. The coat of many colors that Joseph's father, Jacob, made for his favorite son has a symbolic meaning as well as being a literal article of clothing. The story was leaving breadcrumbs for us to follow in order to locate the northern lost tribes of Israel and Joseph's descendants. Think about that. Now, nobody's thinking about this at the beginning. Now we can go and apply the coat of many colors and all the descendants and how they disseminated into the Goyim, the nations. They're all multicolored people. Think about it. Nobody's thinking that. They're thinking, he likes Joseph more than me. They had no idea what was happening. Because the same as we have Jacob showing some favoritism to Joseph is no different than how the brothers got an attitude and plotted to kill him. So what do? We take those two bad thoughts and how do we weigh them against each other? Which one's the best thought? Think about it. We have to let it plays out, and we have the masterful hand of Yah, who's the master at it, and he makes sure he keeps those, he has mercy on those that he wants to have mercy, and he knows what he's doing, and this beautiful picture comes out of how this coat applies to all the nations, the 10 tribes that went the northern kingdoms, and we'll see how that all links together later on. And so this is the coat, kind of what it would have sort of looked like. It's pretty nice. I'd wear that today. So he's walking around with this on. He's walking around with this on, and his brothers are going, look at this guy. He's flashy. I mean, that's flashy. You know, if you're walking around with some desert tan on, and this guy comes out with this on, you're going, what is he trying to prove? And dad's over there just petting him, you know. This is my favorite right here. You're trying to figure out what's going on. But little did anyone know, this was Yah's plan to show that in the future, through this guy right here, these nations, I'm going to save every one of them. They're going to be multicolored. They're going to come from all different backgrounds, all different ethnicities, languages, and I'm going to save them all through this guy. And that's what that coat represented. But at the time, you know, we think he's just being, he's showing favor. He's showing favor to him because God is wooing his heart towards him. If there's going to be anybody, because ultimately, when we get to it, ultimately, Joseph never received the blessing. It was his children, and his children, we see in the scripture, that a grandchild receives the firstborn blessing. The youngest of a grandchild. Because he didn't give it to none of the other sons. And he's got to pass that on. Remember the firstborn blessing that Jacob, he got the way he got it? And what we look at, we see the scheme and the conniving and all this stuff going on. But we don't realize that his mother was getting her information from Melchizedek, who was feeding it to her, because he was the prophet at the time. He was the king of Salem, the king of Jerusalem. And he says, the God, that's going to be the guy right there. The Lord's anointing's on him. She was listening. And she knew, if we don't get this blessing on you, it could be completely messed up. And so when you look at it after the story's told, it's easy to put it together. But before then, if you're just reading it, you're going, man, this is messed up. But did Esau ever change, even though he cried about it? He never changed, because it was all about self. And that's the one blocker that'll block everybody. It'll block us of all the blessings that God has for us. It's self. And so it looks like what Jacob's doing is trying to build Joseph's self up. And it don't look like he's going about it the right way. If you're looking at it, it's not the right way. Today's standards, this wouldn't be allowed. You don't want to have favoritism to one of your children. You want to be fair to all of them. We're talking about God saving an entire nation because of what they're doing. It's incredible. Joseph's coat of many colors, the hidden meaning of Joseph's colorful coat, can be found in the tartans, found in the tartan plaids of the Celtic people, such as the Scottish and Irish tartans. These colors are also found in the coat of arms. Isn't it amazing that it's called the coat of arms? And then we see the coat of many colors, or the coat of arms, issued by Great Britain to certain individuals for a notable work or contribution. And this is sort of what it looked like. So this represents Judah. This represents Ephraim. That's why he has the horn. And then look at all the colors, the different colors. All that was tied in together. Before America was colonized, Great Britain was home of the descendants of Joseph. And still is to thousands, but the descendants of Joseph eventually outgrew the borders of the British Isles, and today resides in much larger countries such as the United States of America, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, as well as Scotland, England, Wales, and Ireland. Think about that for a moment. If you're wondering why there's this awakening happening all over America and these other countries, to the tunes of thousands upon thousands of people, that's why. God is waking up people in their DNA, and they're realizing there's something about this that I've missed all these years, and there's this unique thing that happens where people get this unusual hunger for the Torah. It's a hunger for it. You can't explain it. They know that the Torah is beyond their years, it's beyond their understanding, but they're hungry for it. And that's something that I believe is amazing to see that happening all over the world. And it's amazing to see you here tonight and the people of this church have a hunger for it, and it means something to you personally. It's not just about a group doing it. It's about you realizing how important it is to your life. It's a value. And so you're living out this dream. It's absolutely incredible. And so we have in Ezekiel 37, talks about the two sticks become one. In Ezekiel 37, 15, so we have the two sticks, and we talked about those two sticks, right? This is one, Judah and Ephraim. And you'll see why Joseph, I know we're talking about Joseph, but Joseph has two boys once he's in Mitzrayim in Egypt. He has two sons, one Ephraim and one Manasseh. Manasseh is the oldest, and he positions them for the blessing, but the blessing doesn't go to Manasseh. It goes to Ephraim, who was the youngest son. And again, we see that pattern was happening quite often, where the younger received the blessing. So these two become one, is what this says in Ezekiel 37, 15. And the word of Yah came to me, saying, and you, son of man, take a stick for yourself and write on it Yehuda, and for the children of Israel and his companions. Then take another stick and write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel and his companion. So we take the two sticks, and this is what I brought this in here for. I'll pass this around. I just found this out in the marsh. The two sticks become one. So you can just pass it around. Everybody can take a look at it. And you have Judah on one, and the two sticks in your hand. That's how we've been for a long time. But before Christ returns, what did he say is going to happen? Ezekiel prophesies. The two sticks are going to come back together, and they'll become one in your hand. And that's what that stick represents. They become one in your hand. It's absolutely incredible to be a part of that, to be alive today and be a part of that. It's incredible. And this is exciting a lot of people, I'm telling you. I know if you're seeing it, depends how much you're sharing of your testimony. The more you open up and you're not afraid to share, and you're going to be a little intimidated at first because we're talking about things that we're not 100% on. We feel it inside of us, though. We feel it. We know it's the right thing. But we haven't studied it out enough, and so it's hard to have a conversation about it. It's hard to talk about it when you can't really point them to one. That's why we have to go through the Torah and study like we've never studied before, because it's that important to us. But the more you share this, you're going to find out that people are interested in what you're interested in. It doesn't mean that they want to start doing it, but they're interested in it. They want a conversation about it, and they're not afraid to talk about it. And that's what I found happens. People are not afraid to talk about it. I mean, we got into another conversation today about it. Now, the guy's like, he said, man, you wouldn't believe how many people saying, man, did y'all hear about what Jesse and them's doing? It's absolutely, and he's talking about it to his Jewish friends in the city of New Orleans. And they said, man, that's exciting, huh? He said, how'd they come to that? How'd they find out about that? And so I was telling Pastor Josh that we got invited to go to the Jewish synagogue up in New Orleans by one of the members there, and he's going to show us the Torah, well, handwritten Torah, one of those ones that, you know, they lock them up with lock and key because of how much they're worth. But he wants to take us. He said, man, I'm going to let you see the rabbi. He's going to come there, and we're going to take you through the synagogue, and you tell him everything you told me. That's what he said. Tell him what you told me. So, man, we got to be ready. We want to know what we're talking about. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, what always comes up, is how this happened. This is how this happened. The two sticks become one. Ezekiel's prophecy is being revealed right now. We're living in Ezekiel's prophecy. We ought to be so excited that, you know, people say, are you mentioned in the Bible? I'm mentioned right here. Right here. We're mentioned. We're in this generation right now is the generation that gets a chance to be a part of this. How incredible is that? where God can take what seems to be total failure, where God, the world's finally going to mock God and laugh at him for sure, because what he tried to do, it all failed. God says, when it looks like it's all over, where I got Judah doing his thing, doing the Jewish thing, and I got Christians doing their thing, and they'll never be together, he said, I'll make them one in me. I'll make them one. And this is what he's talking about. He says, write on it for Judah. And so what we did, we wrote Judah right here. And then Ephraim for his companions. And then bring them together for yourself into one stick, and they shall become one in your hand. And when the children of your people speak to you, saying, won't you show us what you mean by these? Say to them, thus saith the Master Yah, see, I am taking the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim. That's why Ephraim comes in, because through Joseph's reign is through his son. His son, which is not the oldest, but the youngest son, Ephraim, and the tribe of Israel, his companion, and I shall give them unto him with the stick of Yehuda, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in my hands. How incredible is that? So, you know, we can go around and say, well, you know, the way the Christians do it, they just do it different. Well, regardless of how we think we do it, if you're ever going to be a part of what God's prophecy says, you got to get out of yourself a little bit and say, you know what? It doesn't matter what I want. It matters what Yah wants. And he said at the end, the two become one in his hand. And so if you fight this and resist this, I don't know how you're going to win this battle, because you're fighting against the very prophetic word that Ezekiel prophesied, that God said in the end, the two become one in my hand. And we don't want to fight against God. How many know we don't win that? And the stick of Yehuda, make them one stick, and they shall be one in my hand. In verse 20, and the stick on which you write shall be in your hand before their eyes. And speak to them, thus said the Master Yah, see, I am taking the children of Israel from among the nations, wherever they have gone, and shall gather them from all around, and I shall bring them into their land, and I shall make them one nation in the land and on the mountain of Israel, and one sovereign shall be sovereign over them all, and let them no longer be two nations, and let them no longer be divided into two reigns. They'll be one. Remember they were under Jeroboam and Rehoboam? That's where they divided. Where they divide? In Shechem. All that ties in. And this is what we see happening. The enemy's always about dividing, but God says, I'm going to bring it together. Verse 23, and they shall no longer defile themselves with their idols. Notice what he says has to happen when you come together. You can't defile yourself with the idols. Because what happens when you're in the dispersion for a long time? You learn stuff. How many of you know we learned already reading the Torah? We learned some stuff. Well, when you're in dispersion, you learn some stuff that you're not supposed to learn. You learn, you try to say, well, this is how they worship God in their culture. And we learn that stuff. This is what they do for their festivities. We learn that stuff. And he says, once you become one, they shall no longer defile themselves with their idols, nor with their disgusting matters, nor with any of their transgressions, and I shall save them from all their dwelling places in which they have sinned, and I shall cleanse them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim. How incredible is that? But notice, before we could be his people and he be our Elohim, he said, I got to clean them up from all this stuff. And let me tell you, that's never easy. Being reprimanded is never easy. Being scolded and cleaned up is never easy. That's the rough part. And so we're going along in the rough part. Sometimes you wait, you don't want to do it all at one time, but thank God for his mercy and his grace that he gave us favor to do it a little bit at a time. But I don't know how you go back. I don't know how you come and step in and taste it and see how incredible Yah is and go back. I don't know how that's possible. Not after he unfolds and reveals himself and you look into his glory. You don't want to go back to lesser glory. Remember, Adam was stripped from the glory, and so that the encounter he could have with Yah was eliminated because he wasn't clothed to be in that arena, in the close proximity that he was. He was in direct proximity of the Almighty. And he was clothed, he was able to be there. But once the clothing came off, the glory, he couldn't be in close proximity. That's why he had to hide himself. And Yah had to speak to him in a different way and different means. But what he's trying to do through the perfect Son, he's trying to bring us in close proximity to him, and he can't do that enough. He says he reprimands us and cleanses us off from all the things we've learned in the dispersion, because we learned some stuff. And we gotta unlearn that stuff. And then he says, while Dawid, my servant, is sovereign over them, they shall have one shepherd and walk in my right rulings and guard my laws and shall do them. Now we know he's speaking of Dawid. This is spoken prophetically of the Messiah, the one shepherd Messiah. Genesis 37, verse 5, and Joseph dreamed a dream and told it to his brothers, so they hated him even more. So he has this dream, and he shares it with his brothers because he's excited. He had a dream. You know, it's never happened before. He's just there shepherding the sheep, and he has this wonderful dream, and he's going to share it with them. And he said to them, please listen to this dream which I have dreamed. See, we were binding sheaves in the midst of the field, and see, my sheaf rose up and also stood up, and see, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. That makes it better. That makes it real better. You know, they're already struggling, and then he gives them this dream that my sheaf stood up, but all your sheaves bowed to my sheaf. If sort of maybe this picture here. This is Joseph's dreaming here, and he's 17 years old, and he dreams about this. He don't know what it means. He's just saying, that's what I saw. And then he sees the sun and the moon and 11 stars at the base of it. He don't know what it means, but he saw it, and he's telling them. But to them, they say, well, you mean you're going to be above us? And his brother said to him, shall you indeed reign over us? Shall you indeed rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. So it's not getting better. And he dreamed another dream and related it to his brother and said, see, I have dreamed another dream, and see, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed down to me. Think about it. And he related it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall we, your mother, and I, and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? Now, these were not ordinary dreams. These were dreams from Yah. Yah's trying to get his heart pliable, trying to get his mind where he can start receiving what Yah's planned for his life. Now, we go and read the rest of the story. We see how incredible these dreams were and how true they were. But can you imagine not knowing the rest of the story and just going into it? What that would create? It would create some scenarios. And his brothers envied him, but his father guarded the word. He guarded the word. Now, he made a pretty rash statement to him here. But he guarded the word. He said, there might be something here. And his brothers went to feed their father's flocks in Shechem. Now, this is important to remember, because what happened in Shechem with his brothers? Remember last week? It was in Shechem where all the men were told to circumcise themselves, and then they killed them all in Shechem, and they took all their livestock. So they got a big flock. They got a lot of animals up there. There was so much they couldn't bring them down to Hebron. They left them there. There were so many. So they travel up to Shechem to tend the flocks and then travel back and forth. But they're up in Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flocks in Shechem? Come, I send you to them." So he said to him, "Here am I." And he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the sheep, and bring back word to me." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. And we had this kind of this map showing last week, we showed it. And so they're here in Hebron right here, and they're going to go all the way up. The brothers are here in Shechem. See Shechem? And they got a big plot of land there and all the animals that they took when they destroyed the men in Shechem. And so he sends him from Hebron. The scripture just said he's in Hebron. This is Joseph. And he goes all the way up to Shechem to check on his brothers. And while he's on that trip, a certain man found him. And see, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, "What do you seek?" Now, this one verse right here, it's, when you know the backstory, it's a wonderful verse. But before you know the backstory, you don't get much out of that. Number one, who's the certain man? The sages says it was Gabriel, but we don't know that. They just say that. A certain man is representative of a certain man that found him, Joseph, which is represented by who? Ephraim. And see, he was wandering in the field. He got to a point where he couldn't find him. He was lost. So he's wandering in the field saying, "I don't know where they are. They're supposed to be in Shechem. My father sent me here, but they're not here. Where are they?" And so because this is representing the 10 tribes that was wandering in the field. They lost. And the man asked him, saying, "What do you seek?" And he said to him, "I'm seeking my brothers. Please inform me where they are feeding their sheep." And the man said, "They have left here, for I have heard them say, 'Let us go toward Dothan.'" Let us go toward Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And they saw him from a distance, and before he came near them, they plotted against him to kill him. Again, this storyline, it matches everything that Yeshua went through when he first came. Instead of them receiving Yeshua, they plotted against him to kill him. So it's just showing you, when you read it with that mindset, when you're reading it, think about that. When Yeshua came, they saw him from a distance, and they didn't receive him. And they said to each other, "See, this master of dreams is coming. Now then, come, let us now kill him and throw him into some pit, and shall say, 'The wild beast has devoured him,' but let us then see what comes of his dreams." So we know he's got all these dreams about what's going to happen, but if we throw him in a pit, we'll see what's going to come of these dreams. And what's the purpose and plan of God to send his only son? What is it for? What was the purpose and plan of Yah to send his only begotten son? To save all of humanity. But if they kill him, we'll see what comes of his plan. We'll see if it all comes together. We'll get rid of him. And then what? Is he still going to save all of humanity? Look at that when you're reading this and see how it ties into the overall story. But Reuben heard and rescued him from their hand and said, let us not strike his being. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Now that statement there is very important because that's a mitzvot. And where did he get it from? If we don't have the Torah, it's not given, it's not written yet. Where did he get it from? Shed no blood. It's the Noahide laws that was given when he come off the ark. One of the things, because remember the problem that he had with all of the world, that they were eating one another. They were flesh-eating each other. They were cannibalized. And they were, so he put this law into place about don't eat the blood. So that blood carried from there to the law, the written law, later on in the Mosaic writings. And so this is where Reuben is getting this statement from. He says, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him in order to rescue him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. That was his intent. He said, well, put him in there. And while the rest of the brothers were busy, he was going to go and get him and bring him back home. That's as Reuben starts. And so it came to be when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his robe and long robe which was on him. This is that coat of many colors. They stripped him of it. They took him and threw him into the pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And that's similar to what happened after they got Yeshua. What did they do? They put him in the pit, in the tomb. And so all of these things are linked together. Now, we'll see them in a little bit. We get there tonight. And they sat down to eat a meal. And they lifted their eyes and looked and saw a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices and balms and myrrh going to take them down to Mitzrayim, which is Egypt. And Yehuda said to his brothers, what would we gain if we killed our brother and concealed his blood? Listen, this is Yehuda, this is Judah. For the first time, he's speaking up. What good would it do for us to kill him and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hands be upon him, for he is our brother, our flesh. And his brothers listened. So Judah said, let's sell him. There was another Judah said something about selling. Again, all those are tie-ins, and for us to, again, what's the probability of that happening the way it happened? If we had to put a number to it. This is the masterful plan of Yah. How he wrote this out for our learning and for our history, for us to take some time to see how he goes through great lengths to make sure that we have a way out. We escape what we're going through. And the men, Midianite traders passed by, and so they pulled Joseph up out and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites. Who sold him? The Midians. But we say all the time, Joseph's brother sold him into slavery. When the text says, the men, the Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they took Joseph to Mitzrayim, which is Egypt. And Reuben returned to the pit, and see, Joseph was not in the pit. He returned there because he was going to do what he's planning to do. And he was not there, and he tore his garment. And he returned to his brothers and said, the boy's gone, and I, where am I to go? That's how bad he felt. He said, I have no place to go. I can't go home to dad. Where am I going to go? He's my responsibility to look after him. So they took Joseph's robe, slew a male goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. Slew a male goat. Where's another male goat? What feast day is another male goat killed on? Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur. Think about that. And he sent the long robe and brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Please look. Is it the robe of your son or not?" And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe." An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is torn to pieces. And Jacob tore his garment, put on sackcloth, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And we see that he mourned for a year. For 1 year he mourned. And all his sons and his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "Now let me go down to Sheol to my son in mourning." So his father wept for him for 1 whole year. 1 whole year he wept for him. Imagine that grief that he was in. And the Midianites had sold him in Mitzrayim to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. We want to look at this in the book of Jubilees. We want to look at the rest of the story here and how this all unfolded. So in book of Jubilees, chapter 34, verse 12 through 19. "And the sons of Jacob slaughtered a kid and dipped the coat of Joseph in the blood and sent it to Jacob, their father, on the 10th of the 7th month." When is Yom Kippur? On the 10th day of the 7th month. So now we see how Yom Kippur came to be, how it became one of the feast days, the appointed times, and what they had to do, how it all came about. He said in the 7th month, on the 10th day, is when they did that. So a male goat was slaughtered. They dipped it in the blood. So one of the male goats of Yom Kippur, they tied a scarlet ribbon on it. And that's the one that is killed. Think about that. It's sent out of the camp. And so all of that is, again, resembles because of this that went on. He mourned all that night where they had brought it to him. In the evening he became feverish with mourning for his death and said, "An evil beast had devoured Joseph, and all the members of his house mourned with him that day. And they were grieved and mourning with him all that day. And his sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted for his son. And on that day, Bilhah heard that Joseph had perished, and she died mourning him." So that this one of his wives died mourning him. And she was living in Kephthah, and Dinah also, his daughter, died after Joseph had perished. And there came these three mourning upon Israel in 1 month, and they buried Bilhah over against the tomb of Rachel, and Dinah also, and his daughter, and they buried there. And he mourned for Joseph 1 year and did not cease, for he said, "Let me go down to the grave and mourn for my son." For this reason, it is ordained for the children of Israel that they should afflict themselves. What do you do during Yom Kippur? Afflict the soul. Afflict themselves. So I'm showing you where Yom Kippur gets its roots. It's all in this story, where it's rooted there. "They afflict themselves on the 10th of the 7th month, on the day that the news which made him weep for Joseph came to Jacob his father. And they should make atonement for themselves thereon with a young goat on the 10th day of the 7th month, once a year, for their sins. For they had grieved the affections of their father regarding Joseph, his son." On verse 19, "And this day has been ordained that they should grieve thereon for their sins and for all the transgressions and for all their errors, so that they might cleanse themselves on that day once a year." The origins of Yom Kippur, the need for atonement originated from the house of Israel being divided against itself there in Shechem. It was there in Shechem that the two houses split 1,000 years later. And this is why he said they have to come back. So in Shechem, right where the brothers went to Shechem, 1,000 years after that event, the two houses split, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. They split. We had the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Ephraim. They were against each other. And they dispersed. The northern kingdom disseminated into the nations. They just went all over and started settling everywhere. And Judah stayed. And the whole plan that God has is to bring it all back together. And it's an amazing story that we read in the scripture. Joseph, a type of the lost house of Israel. Joseph's taken as captive to a Gentile nation. Notice that. He's taken as captive to a Gentile nation. Joseph was sold into slavery and taken as a captive to Egypt. Similarly, prophetically, Joseph's descendants, Ephraim and Manasseh, along with their fellow tribesmen of the northern kingdom of Israel, or house of Israel, were taken as captives into Assyria in 723 BC. From there, they were scattered around the world into spiritual Egypt, where the biblical prophetic predicts they would remain until the final regathering at the end of the age, just prior to and at the coming of Messiah. So if this gathering is happening right now, we're seeing it worldwide. We know it's happening in Plaquemines Parish. We're evidence of that happening. And how did that start? Did it start because somehow we were reading along one day and we said, oh, look at here, that's what we should do. It was by the merciful hand of God that God, through what? Through a dream, through a simple dream, no big dream, just a simple dream. And remember, God speaks through dreams. Most of the time, the dream itself, the things shown in the dream, don't make sense. But they're symbols of stuff, like the butler. You know, he said that there's three vines, and he said all of a sudden there's grapes on the vine, and I squeezed the grapes. And so, you know, what does it mean? Well, Joseph said, well, three vines represent 3 days. And that's how dreams are interpreted. The things you see is just representation of something else. And then outside of the hand of God giving you some insight in the dream interpretation, most people fumble the ball when they try to do it themselves. You just got to ask the Lord. Be okay with it that you ask God. He gave it to you. Not somehow, I got this one figured out. I got this one because I interpreted the last one. I'm going to just use the same scale I used, and most of the time it's going to be wrong. Because you don't do it off a scale. You do it because God gives you the dream. He just reveals it to you. And that's what he'll do. I was in the bed one night, and I was just dozing off. Well, our time here is different than in Nepal. And so we go on to bed, and they're waking up. My phone dings. And usually I have the setting where at a certain time my phone goes quiet because I get dings in the middle of the night sometime. Anybody else get dings in the middle of the night? Anyway, my phone dings, and so I was like, I ain't even looking at it. And all of a sudden, I just feel this overwhelming sense, you better look at it. So I looked at it, and it was a pastor in Nepal. He said, I just had this dream, and the Lord told me to tell you because you have the interpretation. Well, that right off the bat puts you in a position. And so I read the dream, sitting there on my phone. The lights are off, so it's just this glaring thing in my face, and I read the dream. I turned the phone down. I said, God, this man just said that you said to him, I have the interpretation, and if you don't give it to me, there's no way I'll have it. And instantly, I was overwhelmed, with emotion, uncontrollable emotion. I picked my phone up, and I'm not a guy that can send texts. And I went to typing, and I typed that text out completely through and sent it back to him within just a few minutes. And he knew it was from God. He knew it. There was things he said in that dream. I was like, what in the world does that mean? Like, he's in the plane catches on fire, and he floats down in the sky, and there's this pond. He lands in the pond. I'm like, what in the world? It's all over the place. But you can't take dreams in and think your mind is able to fix that real quick. Unless God comes through, you don't know what it means either. Now, can you imagine Joseph's dreams? He's spewing these dreams out about the sheaves, and we gather in sheaves, and my sheaf stands up, and yours all bow down. You know, they just think he's bragging. And I see the sun and the moon and 11 stars. And just all these things. But when God gives you interpretation, it's a matter of fact. You don't debate it. You don't say, well, I think. It's a matter of fact, and you just flow with it. Just a flow. And I've seen God do that before. I've seen him do that, and it's a wonderful thing when it happens. So what we have here is, and you all have a handout. I mean, if you don't have a handout, raise your hand. We'll get one to you. This handout is for everybody here. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these scripture, but they're for you. But we're going to see the similarities of Joseph and Yeshua. Now, Messiah ben Joseph is the first, he would represent the first coming. And then we have Messiah ben David, who would represent the second coming, which is the king that's going to set up. And so for a long time, the Jews saw this as two different people, because they didn't see how God could do this. But what Joseph done, Joseph went through this process, and God then raised him up to that position. And so what did he do for Yeshua? He goes through the process just like he had to be humbled. He humbled him down all the way to the death of the cross, even to the death of the cross. He gave everything. And then what is he going to do? You think he's just going to leave him there? That was a part. Yeshua died, and that's wonderful. Thank God that he died. But is he not going to be raised up? Is he not going to take the throne? Is he not going to reign forever and ever? And this is the part that we're at. We're at that end part. So you'll see, Joseph was a favorite son. Yeshua was a beloved son. He mentioned in Matthew 3:17, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. That voice from heaven came. And we have in Genesis 37:2, he was a shepherd. Joseph was a shepherd. And Yeshua is declared as the good shepherd. So this is just to compare, to show you how many things. Just this alone is a lot of study and a lot of messages. And I encourage all of you to take some time this week and go through and read these passages. See it in your own Bible for your own self and see that. What's the chance of this happening this close, being two different people? The chances of that. And he's trying to show us how all of this, he's called the near youth, he's called the youth. Again, Luke 2:43. Hated by his brothers, he's hated without a cause. Remember he said, I'll raise up a prophet from among you, from your brothers. And the same thing happened. So you can go through each one of these. Sent by his father to find his brothers and return home. He sent by his father to the lost sheep of Israel and returned to him. Think about it. That's exactly what he did. They asked Yeshua, what are you here for? He said, I come from the lost house of Israel, the lost sheep. And that's us. It includes us. Thank God that he came and we're included. He came for us. But we got to live up to, if we're gonna be the light or call ourselves the light, we have to live up to the light. And so we have our work cut out for us. He was thrown into a pit. He was laid in a grave. Yehuda suggested to sell Joseph for silver. Judah Iscariot sold Yeshua for silver. Was jailed with two prisoners. One was raised up and one who was killed. Remember the butler and the baker? He was crucified with two thieves. One went to paradise and the other to death. Think about it. Reuben returned to the pit, saw Joseph was not in the pit. They entered in and did not find the Lord's Yeshua's body. The grave was empty. So it's just showing all of these wonderful there's similarities in the parallels. Faced the temptation and overcame. How many know Yeshua faced temptation and overcame when Satan tempted him? He faced him, but he overcame. 30 years old when he began to rule. When he was in Egypt and he was promoted to the highest status, none other higher than him. When Pharaoh sat on the throne as the only, but if they walked around as two guys, they were equal. But when Pharaoh sat on the throne, he was above him because the throne represented that high authority. And let me just tell you that there's no different than Yah and what he does with his son, because he exalted him above every name. There's nobody exalted higher than Yeshua. And he's going to be our ruling king, the one that comes and returns. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful day. So at 30 years old, when he began his ministry, this is when then Luke looked up and saw him. He said, there's the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. This is what he was 30 years old at that time. His brothers did not recognize him. Israel does not recognize him. Still to this day, the Jews do not recognize him. Think about that. He's concealed in Egypt. Appointed ruler of all Egypt only with the respect to the throne was Pharaoh's greater. Appointed ruler over all the universe, the Father is the greater. The Father is greater than he. Think about it. Same, see these similarities? Wonderful, wonderful. Joseph was made ruler over all the Goyim. Yeshua inherits all the Goyim. He inherited them. Psalms 2, in chapter 2 and in chapter 82. Arrayed in linen and gold. In Revelation 1:13, it says, and John sees him. He's arrayed in linen with a belt of gold around him. Given a new name by the Gentiles, and he's given a new name by the Gentiles. Just think about it. Given a new name by God, given a new name by God. Sent his brothers away twice. Israel is in exile twice, Babylon and in Roman exile. Revealed himself to his brothers upon their third return. Will reveal himself to his brothers upon their third return. And then Zechariah 12:10 talks about that. That revelation is going to be incredible. So, we'll stop right there. It's a good spot because we're going to go into chapter 38 in the morning. So we'll do chapter 38. Y'all need it back? On your sheet? Am I cut off or y'all cut off? Okay. Genesis 45:4. Zechariah 12:10. So in the morning, we'll start with chapter 38. It's going to shift a little bit and talk about Yehuda and Tamar and our Messiah and the order of Melchizedek. So it's just a slight shift in the Torah, but it gets back on it after that. But this story is told by all the players, the different people that's the major players. It brings about the life of Messiah for us all. It's just so wonderful. I can't tell you how excited I am every time I